Welcome to Radical Remembering with psychologist Dr. Narissa Williams. This is a weekly conversation where we explore ways we've internalized oppression and consider what it really means to live liberated. Each episode would leave you with intimate knowledge of the liberation process, sprinkle a little healing magic, and leave you with wisdom for your journey. As you get settled in for today's episode, please make sure to like and subscribe. And if you've liked what you heard at the end, please share. Hey, Anika. So welcome to Radical Remembering. We have with us a guest, Anika Tillery. I've known Anika for the last, I want to say 7 years, 8 years. And yeah, and Anika is just all around dope. Just your perspective about life, your perspective about Blackness, your Blackness in particular. But what made me like, oh, I have to have her on the podcast next season was that at our live launch last year, we had, you know, when we launched, we had like, you know, we invited people and we did like, we watched an episode together and then we discussed it. Anika raised her hand and, you know, you thought it was going to be a regular, audience contribution, question, whatever. But I had chills when you spoke, and I think the audience had chills, and it was almost a standing ovation when you spoke. So I was like, the rest of y'all need to hear Anika, her perspectives, her convictions about Blackness, her own liberation journey, and what have you. So welcome, Anika.
Oh, thank you so much, Narissa. I'm super excited to be here with you and honored to be here with you today.
Thank you.
And nervous.
No need to be nervous. So first, tell us a little bit about who you are. I know you have a nonprofit. Tell us about that.
Okay. Well, excitedly, I have a nonprofit. It's called Our Writing on the Wall. And our mission is to empower survivors of sexual violence and intimate partner violence to own their truth and to really take ownership in the telling of their healing story so that they can own back their voice, own back the control, and help to empower other survivors. We also work to educate adolescents on healthy relationships, healthy behaviors, and also help the community to understand how they also play a role in providing a healing space that, you know, through compassion, through connection, and through support, we can heal as a society versus still stigmatizing survivors. So I'm super excited for that work. We have a number of events coming up that I'll definitely share with you throughout.
Good. Okay, so we'll be talking about that throughout. I want to know, do you remember any of what you were sharing with us on the... Okay, so...
Absolutely.
Let's get there. What has your liberation journey? Because if I remember correctly, you were talking about how darker complected Black women are treated differently. And what has your journey been in your self-love and accepting the beautiful skin that you're in? So if you could pick up from there.
Thank you, Narissa. So it has been quite a journey. And I think it's so interesting. So as a child, I was teased, oh gosh, relentlessly. I mean, I used to have peers stand outside of a classroom door and scream out Black and crispy, burnt, you know, like just really obscene, ignorant things. And so from very young, I felt ugly. You know, I remember writing poetry and asking God, like, why would you put me in the skin if you knew that my life would be difficult, would be challenging because of this skin? And so growing up, just feeling not enough. And I think just even watching television, I always saw the darker skinned Black women. They were the loud ghetto friend, right?
If they got on screen, right?
And so if we made our way there, we were not in a position of class or a position of power. It was always in the negative. And so I think for me, it was about the age of 18. At 18 years old, I remember going to the barbershop and I completely cut off all of my hair, put it into a light Caesar. And I remember putting books on the mirror to block it. I just let them cut. And when he moved the books away, I had no hair. I had nothing to hide behind because for much of my late teens, and I guess mid-teens, late teens, I felt like, okay, well, I'm dark skinned, but maybe I could detract people's eyes from that if I wore my hair long and straight, right? Like really buying in to the Eurocentric standard of beauty. But at 18, I just felt like no more. I just felt so trapped. And so cutting off my hair, I remember for the first time in my life saying, wow, I'm beautiful, right? And feeling that from the inside and the outside, and feeling free from hair, you know, like just feeling free from hiding behind my hair. Yeah.
Wow. 18 seems so, in a world where, I know I got a few years on you, so I'm not sure where 18 fell for you. Was it still the era where there was a bunch of videos with only light skinned women?
Absolutely.
Okay. So in a time where lighter skin was celebrated, I mean, not to say that there is not still the unconscious bias
right.
happening where colorism and texturism is still happening, but the way that it was memorialized then on screen, at least, well, maybe I don't watch videos anymore. And I can't tell you when the last time I watched videos, but in that time, in, you know, where we were, like, that's so hard at 18 to be able to be like, bump all that. So what contributed to that? Like, how were you able to make that decision? Or,
you know what? I honestly, at that age, just drawing closer to God and finding and kind of settling and receiving my identity in Him, and realizing that it wasn't like no one held the power, whether people in my own community, whether white people, like no one held the power over who I am as an individual and even what I look like. And so embracing my identity in Christ really catapulted my liberation journey.
Spirituality, right? And then in sound like getting centered, getting connected to like your source, that has such a wealth. And now how is that related? Because it's not always related to your Blackness, right? So how did Christianity help you, or your spirituality help you specifically related to your Blackness? Like, was your church talking about it? Like,
no, I'm, you know, honestly, like I said earlier, I write poetry. And I remember just sitting down one day and I was just like, I just need to get my thoughts out. And I wrote a poem to my father, who is Jamaican, and my mom is from the South. And my father is very dark skinned. And his mom is very light skinned. And when she was pregnant with him, my grandfather is also dark skinned. So when she was pregnant with my father, her family made her live in the crawl space of the house back in Jamaica, which, you know, wasn't safe, right? And so, but talking to him, and we don't have a relationship. He wasn't in my life, but those pockets of experiences that I did have with him, I remember sitting down and him telling me that he would sit in the sun to become darker because darkness was beauty, right? Mm-hmm. And this is a dream that God gave me from a man that wasn't even really in my life. Mm-hmm. And I remember sitting there like, I never got much from him, but in that space, I received a gift from him that I felt like God really gave me to embrace that what I look like was so much attributed to my father's dreams.
Mm-hmm. I love that. And I'm also thinking, you know, I always think about individuals embedded in social context, right? So I'm also thinking about what if he, I mean, even if in womb and if in utero, he was getting the message socially in his environment that he was undesirable because he was dark skinned, then what in him? But I also do know that Jamaicans are maroons and not all maroons, but there is a rebellious core to the culture. You know, historically, that would also contribute to that, even in the presence of texturism and
absolutely
that's happening. But I'm also thinking of Bob Marley and like the social consciousness of that era. And then also, I mean, I'm sure he has individual traits that you know, contribute to this too, but also how those things are important for social movements and how we're internalizing and understanding our Blackness.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
I'm grateful though. I'm grateful that he was able to, if that's the one gift he could give you, that was the gift, you know? And so at 18, still to, because it's still countercultural still for you to be like, oh, you
Oh,
know,
yeah.
you cut the hair, right? I am not my hair, right? But you were still able to see it as beautiful. There were some people who gets who would cut their hair and still be like, damn, I'm still ugly, right? You saw beauty. And so could you speak to that?
I saw beauty, and so funny enough, I was in college, and I went to a PWI, predominantly white institution in Western PA, and so there was probably 4% black students on my campus, and I did not look like any of the other women on campus. And so not only was it against the social norm back in my community, back in Brooklyn, but it totally was out of the social and cultural norm back on my college campus. And so I really did not fit in so many spaces at that age, 18, 19. And still, as you said, and as I said, I saw beauty because it felt like, who said it in his lyrics? Like, Tupac, the darker the berry, right? The closer to earth, right? The closer to earth that you are. And so it was funny for me, it in the physical on my face, I saw beauty. On my face, I saw melanin. On my face, I saw the beauty of the midnight sky. But it's funny enough, physically, I still felt unattractive. Physically, I was always very slim. This is my, I'm like slim thick now, is what I like to say. It's my thickest I've ever been in my life. I'm slim thick. But at that age, I was still made fun of for being too slim. And so I remember I had an ex-boyfriend say to me that I had the perfect white girl body. And I remember feeling like, well, like, what does that mean? You know, because I wasn't a white girl. I was a black woman, right? And he said to me, he was like, but it's a compliment. It's a compliment. He was a black man. It's a compliment. It just means that you're slim with the right curves, but you don't have like all the curves of a black woman because you're more skinny. You're skinnier like a white woman. And it's just craziness, right? And so I remember feeling like, dang, not only did I now have to come to this place of acceptance of my skin, but now this is going to be its own journey of being okay with my body because I did not fit the quote unquote look of a black woman. I did not have a bust. I did not have child rearing hips, right? I did not have this behind that we've been conditioned to believe that that's what a black woman is supposed to look like, right? And we bought into that, which is why we see so many women of color dying from trying to create that body. And so even that became his journey of accepting myself physically and saying, like this is me 100% and who God has created me to be. And I'm either going to live in celebration of it or I'm going to die resenting it. And then die if I die in resenting it, then I'm never going to fulfill the purpose that he has in me. And so that became of greater importance rather than believing what the world said I should look like.
Yeah, say that again. Live in celebration of it.
Yeah.
What's the last part that you said? Either
Live in
or.
celebration. Oh, so either live in celebration of it or die trying to, being angry about it, rejecting it, right? I think the rejection of ourselves is what keeps so many of us in that in bondage, right? The everyday of having to walk out and feel like I'm just not enough. And it can impact, it impacted relationships because like even like girlfriends going out with them, if I felt like the ugly duckling, then I didn't have fun. If I felt like, the people in the boardroom were looking at me as if I had my fist in the air, right? Then am I showing up as my authentic self? And I had to realize, listen, whether you see a fist in the air or you don't, like I'm showing up as Anika in her full beauty inside and out.
Yeah, I love that. One, what I was thinking too is that we have not like so in our culture, it was necessary for our survival for us to think about our blackness. It is much
Absolutely.
less and later that we think about how gender also influences our experience. Not gonna lie to you, white women taught me about feminism. Like so, when I used to teach a cross-cultural class, and when I taught this class when I was at Medgar Evers College, which was predominantly, I mean, it was very, very small sprinkling of white students, but so it's predominantly Black. When we talked about racism, like gender didn't come up, right? And I hadn't as much thought of myself in a gendered way, because like I said, it wasn't necessary for my survival.
If you enjoy listening to Radical Remembering and would love to get the season dropped before everyone else, if you want exclusive invites to live and virtual events and could benefit from daily liberation inspiration, like affirmations, thought-provoking questions, and daily guidance, then download our free app, Living Liberated, in the App Store or on Google Play. You can also find the link below in the description box.
But then when I was teaching at NYU, cross-cultural counseling, the white women brought it up all the time. And you know, that was at their, I had a student, she was so funny. She was like, she's a Dominican student, Afro-Dominican student. She was like, that's their one issue. That's their one issue. So, but anyway, in hearing them, and I'm like, oh, you know, I had now the luxury of thinking, and I'm calling it a luxury because, like, yeah, okay, that was my first thought too, if Blackness wasn't so hated against, you know, in America and globally. And so I began to think about the impacts of that, yet and still I was left defenseless. The years, because we weren't socialized to name
right.
It was oppressive, and that was an impact, how you're judging your body, whether or not it's appealing, whether or not it's curvy enough, whether or not you can attract or any of those things by the standards of patriarchy, right? Because of sexism, stuff like that. So that's an important part. And I like that you've named it too, because it really speaks to the fact that liberation is not a one and done. Like, we need to go each of the buckets, each of the wells, to be where have I internalized these harmful thoughts about who I am and my identities, and also the identities of other people in relation to me too. I was speaking last week, 2 weeks ago, right? So this woman, I don't like to share people's name in case it's not business they want to share. Right. But this woman shared this really, really beautiful activity that she did to learn to love herself. Right. Because, again, living in a world where you're told that you're not attractive. And what she used to do was stand in the mirror. Right. Because I had said, because I was going to ask you about your practices. So I had shared that I did a mirror, and I got it from Louise Hay's book, Mirror Work. Right. And I looking in the mirror and saying, I love you. I really, really love you. And it was in that work that I realized that I only look in the mirror for function. Like, all right, do I look enough as I'm exiting the door? Let me put this makeup on real quick. And then I go, I don't look at myself for pure value of looking at myself. And so in that activity, I love you. I really, really love you. And doing that until something breaks, and then doing it several times, that it was powerful. And so she shared that with her what she did, the version of it that she did, she would sit in the mirror and she could only say things that were affirming and positive about herself. If she slipped up and said something negative, she had to start over, right? It took, I believe, 61 or 62 days to get 30 minutes straight of only positive. She kept having to start over because something negative came up, because these are the internalized voices of others, right?
Wow. So
super, super powerful. Another one is like even sitting in the front of the mirror naked, right? Because we're living in a world where like, oh, that's not, look at how that looks lumpy, or that's not curvy, or that's flat, or whatever. That's hard. It's really, really hard. So I'm curious, because you said yes, I'm curious if you did anything.
All of that, all of that, 100%. One, standing in the mirror, I have affirmations around the mirror. So I am enough. I am worthy. I am beautiful. And just speaking life into myself. Also taking the moment to stand in the mirror and recognize what I like about my face. And so looking in the mirror and saying, I like my eyes. I like my high cheekbones. I love my full lips, like recognizing the things that was shamed so long ago, but some women are paying to have done today, right? And I absolutely, that was standing in the mirror naked was part of my practice for a long time. Now I do it for fun, but I would get out of the shower. And I would just take off the towel and I would just stand there and I would stand in the mirror and just stare at myself from head to toe. And the first couple of times, no words, just stood there staring at myself. I could not turn away. I didn't allow myself to speak about anything that I saw. I just had to become comfortable with staring at myself completely naked. And then times after that is when I would begin to kind of examine myself from head to toe, but not a negative examination, an examination of recognizing Anika. I think I rejected my body for so long that I was no longer connected to it, right? I didn't recognize my body. So standing there, I had to first recognize myself that I could accept myself. And then that also came with noticing, okay, I have cellulite here and I like it, right? Like I have a dimple here and I like it. And then it went from standing there and observing to dancing in the mirror. And if that meant the belly jiggled a little, then I probably helped it to jiggle, right? But for me, it just became, this is my body. This is my body. I'm not paying to have it changed. So Anika, embrace it, celebrate it, accept it, and know that this is you. And so a lot of that work definitely was done in the mirror, like just reflecting on it, reflecting, but also rejecting what society said. And also just setting myself free from the thoughts of, I felt like if I could set my mind free from thinking that every Black woman has a butt, that I can help other like young Black girls know that that is not correct, right? That every Black woman has a tiny waist. That is a lie. Like that is totally incorrect, right? We come in different shapes, different sizes. There's such a beauty across Black women, you know, that I wanted to embrace it. And I really felt like if I didn't do the work, when I have a daughter, how am I going to help her? And so I made it my business to do the work so that I will be able to pour into her, not from a place of insecurity, but from a place of celebration.
Yeah, I love that. You also said, I didn't want to interrupt you, but you said something, it was profound. So help me fill in the blanks. You began to reject your body. You disconnected from your body because you rejected it. And so the work was to recognize. Can you say, even if you have to say, just say it again for us to let it marinate.
So first the work was just recognizing myself again. I think because I ran from myself for so long, I didn't recognize myself. I didn't recognize what I look like because, like you said, you know, we get dressed, you look in the mirror for functionality. Okay, my clothes are in the right place, my hair in the right place. I left. My body, I wasn't connected to it to recognize the, like, I just the other day I found a new mole on my hip. I'm 40 years old. I've never seen this mole. Well, where did the mole come from? And so it
Welcome
really
to
became,
40, baby.
but where did it come from? But how do I had to first recognize myself in order to receive it, right? You know, I think it's like when you think about love, in order to really accept real love and true love, you have to first recognize what it is from a healthy lens. Versus the negative lens of trauma that you may have experienced in unhealthy love, right? So how do I first recognize healthy loving behavior so that I can be healthy in a relationship? And so I had to first recognize Anika's body so that I could connect to my body and therefore just connect my mind to my body and exist in celebration versus rejection.
I love it. I love it. I love it. I'm thinking about self-love and it as a journey. And I was so from my first marriage to my second marriage, as you and I have talked about this, it was 8 years. I was single for 8 years. I mean, there was a lot going on too. 6 years, I was a single mama, but 6 years of that 8 years, I was also working on a doctorate. So there was not a whole lot of available time anyhow. But after a while, I would say, was it the the sixth or the seventh year, and I had wanted a relationship because I'm a relationship kind of person. I'm a Cancer. Relationships, domestication matter much to me, right? And maybe around 2 6 years into that 8th year period, I was like, man, whatever. First of all, I already got a child. I'm good. I don't, you know what I mean? I am okay. And so what I then began was to like work on myself and love myself. And it's not that I was totally neglecting it altogether, but I was largely neglecting it and having everything to do with the fact that I was working full time on and then on a doctorate and then and mothering. And so I was leaving little time for myself. So first, who was I going to attract? Second, I needed to heal from the damage of the marriage and to repair the how I think of myself, but also to repair how I thought of myself based on earlier childhood experiences as well. And so I began to like write myself love letters and
I like that.
Think about the things that I did like about myself. I probably didn't do full mirror exercises, but I would stop in the mirror. I saw a picture. I had a picture of myself in childhood on the wall. And because I had been so criticized and, my sister was lighter skinned. Somehow I was darker when I was younger, but I don't know. I don't still don't look at it and think, oh, I was dark skinned, but I was darker and my sister was lighter skinned. There was commentary about that is so there was explicit statements about my skin complexion where I from extended family members, but there was implicit behavior too around skin complexion that I experienced, right? And so I had a picture and I always thought that I was ugly as a child, right? Even my the problem of having aunts and uncles that were still in their teens is that they like my aunt, God bless her, she used to make fun of me and say that I had soup cooling lips. And so and she said she also used to mind you, this one was in my 20s. She was like, damn, your teeth so big you can't even close your mouth. Like, and she just I know she used to say, why am I showing people this? I guess because I don't care no more. Like this. I used to suck my thumb for comfort. I went through a lot. I needed comfort as a child. But I used to suck my thumb so I have an overbite. So when I close my mouth, you see the like the little she was like, damn, look at the strain in your chin. You can't even close your mouth without a strain, right? Thank you for myself, what you've done for my self-esteem. And I also jokingly love her. But it didn't do well for my self-esteem. So I was ugly as a kid. And so but I put up this picture of myself on the wall. And so I passed it one day and I was like, oh shoot. Like I had the picture on the wall, but I never thought that this was a cute child. I could never see. And then all of a sudden I was like, this is such a cute picture. I was cute. Like the conception never occurred to me. And even more so now that the picture I was six, my daughter is, she just turned five. Can you imagine? She just turned five. But anyway, I see some resemblances. Even when she saw the picture, she was I was like, who's that? She was like, it's me. I was like, actually, it's me, right? But now I can't look at her and but like anyway, point of the story is that that picture also I had to take it down off the wall and love it up, and hug it up and different things like that. Long story short, I that healing work began to revolutionize what and who and how I was attracting in life. And I remember that summer, it was just so random. Like I got a text from somebody that would have been my intern. I just want you to know that you're such a strong and powerful. And it wasn't like trying to get at me email. This was the love I was giving myself was being brought back to me, right? You're so strong and I've learned so much from you and blah, 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 right? And so then another text. I just wanted to say you're beautiful. Random people like this, and it wasn't like, again, I'm making sure to accentuate. It wasn't like, let me try to get at you. It was your communication. And so it revolutionized how the world was even re relating to me. And then it was a year later that I met my husband. And so because of the work that I was doing, what I'm curious about when I hear your story, does it ever crop up? Like you started young. You're that's over 20 something years ago. Does it ever crop up for you? To the extent.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
So I'm single. I won't say on air how long I've been single. But I'm single, and so it's cropped up it's cropped up. It tries to kind of creep back in the singlehood because, you know, sometimes the mind has to make it has to like make it make sense as to why you're single. Like, well, maybe I'm single because of this, or maybe I'm single because of that. So those are the moments that it tries to come back in, and then I have to stop and I have to check myself and I have to remind myself of how amazing I am, right? And I think also a lot of what you were saying I resonated with, because in this singlehood, my singlehood wasn't wasted on waiting for a man, right?
Oh,
It
that's
hasn't
good.
been wasted on waiting.
Liberation is 100% about being in right relationship with our power. It's so easy from day to day to disconnect from our source and forget who we really are. On our app, Living Liberated, we have the tools to keep you plugged in. You'll find a library of affirmations, guided meditations, guided journeys, and tapping sequences to keep you in a state of alignment with who you really are. Topics range from self-love, healthy relationships, activating our DNA, to guided journeys with your ancestors. Download our free app, Living Liberated, and start your free 7-day trial now in the App Store or Google Play. You can also find the link for Plugged in the description box below.
It hasn't been wasted in a state of despair, right? And sadness and loneliness. No, like in my singlehood, I love what you said earlier. I went to those different buckets. I had to go to the corners of my life and really deal with and dig up some inceptions of low self-esteem and rejection of self and abandonment issues, right? I had to deal with all of that stuff because I recognized that that was impacting relationships. So it impacted who I attracted, and then it also impacted how I related in that relationship, right? So I started doing that work and some self-reflection and some healing and some therapy. I went to school. I got my master's in psychology, my master's in social work, my license as a social worker. I started a business. I started my nonprofit, right? Like I started to build up Anika, not in the space of, I don't need a man. No, I would like one, right?
Right.
But in the space of Anika, like you have so many possibilities. Like I started only being a mom and only being a daughter or a sister or a friend or an employee. But I was like, what about Anika? Like how are you feeding yourself? How are you building yourself up mentally, physically, spiritually, emotionally, financially? So I had to begin to build myself up in all of those areas so that when it does happen, when I am in like a relationship and feeling settled in it, I never wanted to be in a space of my husband saying, who hurt you? Right.
Right.
Like I never wanted that. I never wanted him to say that. And so that means that I had to do the work and I wanted to feel good about myself. And that was also part of my liberation because where I grew up in East New York, Brooklyn, and unfortunately, you know, it's a housing development, the projects, the hood. And unfortunately, many people would say not much good can come out of those communities, right? So having to contend with systems in place that created it so that many of us didn't, quote unquote, make it out. But I had to contend with, I did make it out. And so in making it out, what am I going to do to make the best of that so that in any relationship, I'm not entering that relationship from a place of insecurity or a place of he's going to make me whole and complete and bring joy. No, I'm going to be whole. I'm going to be complete. I'm going to know the source of my joy. And then we can build each other up in that, right? And so all of it really does come from that place of freedom.
Yeah. Yeah, so I love it. And, you know, I was having a conversation this week too. Actually, it was yesterday and I was talking to somebody and I said, I was like, in communities I come from, right? And so a lot of people might be like, what? You grew up in Long Island, what are you talking about, right? But let me tell you, was intentionally impoverished the same way some of the city and suburbs, because it's a Black neighborhood, North Amityville, I should say. It was a Black neighborhood, crack epidemic hit us and different things like that. But I was sharing like that language made it out of, that's like war language.
Yeah, yes.
I made it out
Yes.
of, like, I got out the hood like that. Well, I'm naming it because layer upon layer upon layer, right? So you named abandonment, right? So I'm saying this because we're not only having to contend with personal traumas, we're having to contend with personal traumas, systemic traumas, even the ways in which interpersonal traumas, because of people in our environment, how they become the arm of oppression and they stand outside the classroom and say blackety crispity black. You know what I mean? And all those kinds of things that we're not free to. It would be a luxury to just be like, oh, I was abandoned and I've had to work on that all my life, right? But it's like layer upon layer upon layer upon layer to just be able to be, right? So, right?
Yeah, to just be able to be,
That's, you gotta take a breath on that one. Wow.
yeah,
So, where are you
that's
now?
powerful.
Yeah, right? So, you said that you're 40 now, right? So, where are you
Whew.
now in your liberation journey?
40. 2 weeks ago, turned 40. Cannot believe it.
He
My
just
grandma
got
asked me,
wet.
yeah, Joe, things just got real. I am. My grandma said to me, how did it happen so quickly? Grandma, you tell me. I don't know, right? I think at this point, I feel, God, I feel good. I feel like I have worked so hard to become Anika, this version of myself. I've worked so hard to become the woman that I am today that I am not willing to compromise her for anyone or for anything. And so I think now at this point in my life, it's being okay with the goodbyes, right? In your 20s, you try to hold on for dear life, like friendship just because of time. But now it's a place of, it's the freedom to say, if you don't want to be here, then bye. Right? And that's it, like that's in romance, that's in friendships. If we cannot serve, I think servitude is such a huge part of relationships, right? If we can't be of service to each other in the tangible, but also in the showing up for each other, then bye. I'm feeling more comfortable owning my voice and being able to speak up for myself. Growing up and in my 20s and 30s, I could be the extreme end. I can either be or I can really like shut down. And for a long time, I didn't know a medium. And because I did not want to be like the loud ghetto girl, right? That stereotype, I oftentimes retreated into myself because I just didn't want to turn other people off. But now I've found that medium in my life, the medium of being able to exist unapologetically, the medium of being able to speak up for myself. And the medium of being able to say, like, this is what I want, and this is what I've worked for, and this is what I deserve. And so funny enough, I was introduced to a guy a couple of months ago, and the conversation, like the first conversation, went amazing. Like I was like, oh, like really, some really cool guy. And I think it was only like one or two really serious questions, in the sense of like, what do you do? What's your passion? He asked that question. I answered that question, and then that was it. We talked more about, like what do you like to do for fun and things of that nature. And then I never heard from him again, right? And so, and he reached out and he said, you're such an amazing woman. You're so this and you're so that. I would love to continue the conversation tomorrow. Okay, cool. I told a friend of mine that had introduced us, and then 2 weeks had gone by, and I said to her, well, like what happened? And I showed her the thread, and she was like, that was a really good conversation. I said, I know, like what happened? And she was talking to him, and I did not send her to talk to him. Like at that point, I felt like he disqualified himself. Great. But she went to him and he said to her, wow, she really knows what she wants. And she's really direct. And so that's just too much for me right now. And 20-year-old Anika would have would have felt like, oh, well, no, that's not what I meant. And well, no, let me 40-year-old Anika is like, you're darn right, right?
Thank you. Thank you. You
It's
saved
not
us
like it's
time.
you save this time, and it's not in like a ball busting way,
Yeah,
but it's
yeah,
in the way of we all should be direct. If you ask me a question, I should be able to, with clarity and with conviction, speak,
yeah.
right? And isn't that what we all deserve, to be able to reach that point in our lives and to be comfortable enough? And so if you can't exist in that space with me and also operate in that same way, then bye.
Right. Yeah, it's funny. Years ago, I went on a date with this guy, right? I mean, afterwards, I was like, first of all, you're not even straight. But and I'm not. This is like, if I told you the date, maybe I'll tell you the date off air. But he was like, yeah, I don't like black women because they have too much self-esteem. I was like, what the hell? Like, is there such a thing as too much self-esteem? Yeah, y'all got too much self-esteem. Like, I'm worth this. I know what my worth is. I'm like, first and foremost, right? Maybe we've been in a system that has been so hard on us that we've had to think about it more. So it's a part, it's enculturated more. You know what I mean? But either way, long story short, in the end, I was like, okay, you're not even straight. You don't even like women. What are we talking about right now? Like, so
Well, you know what's funny, Narissa? So I actually had an opposite experience a couple of years ago. I was in the Home Depot, and I had this is when I had my locks in. So I had, similar to you, one side was shaved, and I had my locks coming down to the other side. And this black man walked up to me, a stranger walked up to me, and he looked at me and he said, "I just wanted to apologize to you." And so I'm looking at this man. I have no idea who he is. And I just looked at him. He said, "I want to apologize." He said, "I apologize for all of us." He said, "I apologize if we told you that your look was too much. I apologize if we told you that you were too much. I'm sorry. I'm sorry that we weren't strong enough to receive you exactly how you are." And then he walked away. I never knew his name. He wasn't, as you said earlier, he wasn't trying to get with me, wasn't trying to spit game, but he said, what I loved about it was he recognized the what's been set up against black women, right? From complexion to our hair to our bodies, the rejection that we face in society from other cultures, but particularly in our own community, the rejection that we have faced. And so he just apologized for it, and I was amazed by it, because it for me, if I felt like, wow, he's done some work on himself, right, to reject the norms and to be able to just come and say, "I'm sorry."
I'm wondering, like, how do you move on after that? Somebody comes and you're like, wait, are you single?
Going to say that
That's so
Oh, goodness.
beautiful. And it could only happen if you, from you having done the work that you're telling us that you did, it could only happen because if you weren't a match for that, you would not have received that.
No, I would have been like, "What you mean? What you sorry for?" Right?
Right.
Attitude. Yeah. But to be in the place. Just to my goodness, like I'm free, you know, on my birthday, I remember just sitting actually in this chair, and I was just sitting here, and I was talking to God, and I was like, "God, I'm free, you know, I'm in so many areas of my life that was a place of bondage." Like it feels good. It feels amazing to say I'm free from this idea of someone else's beauty. I'm free from this idea of how women are supposed to show up. I'm free from feeling like I have to soften my look to be acceptable to you. No, Anika walks up in every space with her head held high, with her signature red lipstick on. You know,
Yes.
someone actually said to me, well, you know, you shouldn't wear red lipstick because it's too powerful. You should wear like a blush. And you shouldn't wear your pantsuits. You should wear a skirt. And you
Wow.
shouldn't wear your hair natural. You should wear, like, maybe you should straighten your hair.
Was with
And
a black person?
this was a Latinx female and a black man. Both were telling me how I should exist in the world.
Talk about
And
internalized depression. Yeah.
talk about it. And that's what I remember looking at them, just feeling sad for them, right? And feeling like, if I hope you can evolve to the place
Yeah.
of acceptance that what you're saying to me, if someone said to you, would roll off your shoulder. Like I didn't even feel the need to defend it. I just looked at them and said, okay, well, I think someone even said to me, you sit too straight up in the chair. Maybe you should slouch. And all of it came from a place of you don't want to come off too powerful. And
Wow.
I said, but Anika is powerful and
Yeah.
Anika is strong. And that's okay. That's okay, right? And so I am dark skinned and I love it. I have 4C here and I love it, right? I am slim. I love it. I'm single. That's okay. I'm free. And I think that's all I need. That's where I need to exist.
I love it. Yeah, you know, I was telling another group recently that when you're loving yourself in this way, that everything else is gravy. Even your
Yes.
partner's love is gravy. Like, you know what I
Yes.
mean? So even, I mean, do I want my husband to compliment me? Yeah, that feels good.
Absolutely.
Oh, you see me. Okay. Like, it feels good, but I have already determined those things about
Yes.
myself too. So I'm not looking for it. Like, I might
Yes.
miss that it's not happening because my needs are so, my cup is so full
Yes.
already from what I'm
Yes.
doing, you know, but that's a different me than, you know, 20 years ago. Actually, 20 years, this is a funny, yeah, 2020. The funny thing is, right, is that I have major social deficits. So, I didn't have consciousness or even think about those things. I didn't think about if my body was curvy, if I didn't think about any of those things until my late 20s. No, it wasn't even my late 20s. I got all the way into my mid 30s, and somebody I was dating, I feel like I told you about this. Somebody I was dating dumped me because he said, it's just funny when I think about it now. He said I had a little kid body. He was like, I like you, and it's like I feel this intense a warmth, you know, like I, you know, and I was like, you love me, like where we going, right? And then he was like, but I'm not sexually attracted to you in the least, right? And so when he
Dag in the least.
exactly. And he had spoken to his mentor about it to see what he could do about it. I was like, well, damn, is that bad? Like, that you had to speak to somebody about it? Like, the point of this story is, I'm just laughing because it's only you who would have to up here laughing and tell all my story. But point of the story is, it was then in my early 30s. So that I even began to think, oh my God, I don't have a body. I didn't even realize, like, because I never really assessed one way or the other. So yeah, I forgot where I was going with that because I enjoyed laughing so much. But yeah, but now I was like, it won't affect me the same way.
That's right.
Yeah. So
That's right.
too funny, too funny. So you said you're working with adolescents too, and what are some of the ways do you impart these messages? If so, how?
Yes. So funny enough, I actually have a workshop this week virtually and next week in person. So it's real talk with teens and adolescents on healthy behaviors in relationships, so how to recognize those behaviors in relationships, because February is actually Teen Dating Violence Awareness Month. And so we're doing the work this month to work with them to help educate them and to help parents be educated, right? I think if we, so when we talk about teen dating violence, when we talk about intimate partner violence, when we talk about sexual violence, I think we really, we cannot ignore that the messaging that we receive from childhood, right? Remember being 6 years old, a little boy hit you. What was told to us? Oh, he just likes you, right? And so they would, they were told the same thing. Oh, what, just that's how she knows that you like her. And so we're taught from very young that violence is the way to demonstrate that you care about someone. So how, we have to go in and dig out those schemas, right? Like kind of reinforce them. And I think it's the same thing when we talk about sexual violence. So in April is Sexual Assault Awareness Month, we have an event that's being held in person in Queens. It's called Reclaim My Voice, Speak Out. And it's an event where we're holding space for survivors of sexual violence to, again, own the telling of their healing stories, right? Mm-hmm. Like, they don't owe us the stories of their trauma. And so anything that a survivor shares with us is a privilege to hear. And so we're holding the space and allowing them to take whatever space they want to share what that journey of healing has looked like. And then just allowing the community to recognize that rape, sexual violence is an epidemic. And so that means it's going to call for collective healing. And so that event is April 13th. If you want any more information about either of those events, you can actually reach us at www.ourwritingsonthewall.org, O-R-G. And that's where, you know, you'll get more information. But we're really looking to go out there and just to educate adolescents and support survivors. I did a workshop a couple of months ago, and it's called the Released Workshop. And my goodness, so many women in that space shared their experiences about being violated sexually, whether it was in their childhood, in their adulthood. And when you really sit down and think about how many moms, aunties, grandmas, sisters, yeah, cousins, and friends share the story, share the trauma of being sexually violated, yet we still have to exist in our other roles. It's time that, you know, our organization is really about allowing the space for a woman to say, I was raped, I was sexually assaulted, and the shame and the stigma not be attached to that, right? Like the shame and the stigma should be on the person that caused the harm, not on the survivor of the harm. And so that's the space that we want to hold and create.
Oh, I love it. I love it. I love it. It sounds so restorative, and it sounds like you're getting to infuse all of the things, all of the messages into that work. Good.
Yeah. Yeah.
So, Anika, thank you so much. I enjoyed our conversation.
Likewise.
I enjoyed our conversation, and I really hope that people look more into the organization. We will share that information in the description box below. Do you have any closing words?
Oh, guys, I have so many, but first I'll say to you, keep hosting this amazing podcast. Love it. I love the conversations and the guests that you brought on. Season one was the bomb. Definitely loved it. I think just holding the space for these conversations to take place, because for many people, it might not be part of their everyday, right? Or maybe they never even thought about how they might be on their own liberation journey, or even recognizing that they need to have a liberation journey, exactly, right? Like realizing that, wait, maybe I'm not as free as I thought or as enlightened, right? Yeah. But I'll share with everyone that's listening that the work starts with you. And it's not a work that should be forced by anyone else, but it's a work that has to start with you so that you feel whole, mm-hmm, right? And I think wholeness is what we all seek for. And that wholeness is on multiple levels. And so, as you said earlier, there's layers to it. It doesn't stop. It's not a day's work, right? Like trauma, the effects of trauma can be a long time. You've had so many different inceptions of negative thoughts. And so it's going to take time to reframe, to shift, and to grow. And so we're worth it, right? Like, you're worth it. You're worthy. You're wonderful. You're like, we're worth the work to do so that we can live a free life. And don't allow anyone to stop you from existing.
Yes, thank you. There was nugget after nugget after nugget. So the fact that you could even conjure like some more and give to the audience, I'm appreciative. All right, y'all. Thank you. And until the next time.
Thanks for listening. If you've loved what we've had to share and want to be the first to get releases of our new episodes and learn about events, download our free app, Living Liberated, in the Apple or Google Play Store.